Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Street Cultivation 3 by Sarah Lynn, narrated by Travis Baldry. Chapter 1. Brutal Dreams. Rain battered the top of the skyscraper, and Rick wasn't himself. He could feel the rain stinging against his bare back and the aura pulsing through his body, but something was wrong. A moment ago, he had been somewhere else, the memory already dissipating, yet now he felt rage cascading down over him, as undeniable as the rain. A city glimmered around him, the lights strangely muted and blue in the rain. They extended in all directions, obscured only by swaths of darkness from other skyscrapers blotting out the world below. He didn't recognize anything about where he was, but he could barely even look around him, instead drawn to look across the roof where he knew someone would be standing. The man was about his height, with dyed blue hair that seemed to glow with the lights of the city. He wore a dark combat suit that clung to his body, even where it had been ripped in several places. As Rick stared at him, the man grinned and raised a fist. He gripped a ribbon of torn red cloth. Instantly, Rick knew that it was a piece of Melissa's robes. It was simply red cloth, and in the pouring rain it could have been anything. Yet he knew. He began to run forward, letting out a wordless cry. His opponent's lips moved, and Rick heard nothing, the world blurring around him. Rick Hunter woke up in the bed of his lodge and stared at the ceiling. His heart was still pounding, and he could feel his lucromasole surging within him, seeking an opponent who didn't exist. He hoped. Rick swatted aside the covers and swung his legs out of bed, just sitting on the edge for a while and trying to breathe. The cold wood against his bare feet helped him come back to reality, reassuring him that it had only been a dream. Obviously, it was just a dream. He dreamed every night, and often woke with fragments of imaginary battles in his head. It had been nearly a year since he fought Jack, yet he still occasionally had dreams where the man's burning tattoos tore him apart. Occasionally, he even dreamt of fighting Mike, including one horrifying dream where Melissa had been forced to fight him. Inventing an imaginary opponent was nothing new. Still, it left him thrown off his rhythm. Usually, his dreams faded quickly, but this one stuck with him, and it had made his lucromasole activate even while he was unconscious. Recognizing that he wasn't going to get back to sleep, Rick strained to his feet. Early sunlight cast his cabin in subtle shades anyway. He ran his hands through his hair, decided he didn't need to shave, and ate some cereal straight out of the box. There had been milk at some point, but his tiny fridge had run out. By the time he was finished, he felt normal again, despite the lingering dream and the early hour. When he pulled on his jacket and slipped into his tennis shoes, he was ready to start the day. Out this early, there was a chance that he could find Delson. The older man had been avoiding him for some time, though it was probably due to cantankerousness more than anything else. They'd spoken briefly about the dark blood kettle, confirming that there was nothing sinister about its psychological effect, but otherwise the old man didn't want to be used as a source of information. If anyone knew about dreams, it would be him. Rick had mostly put the dream behind him, but decided that he would ask anyway just to round out his knowledge. Meanwhile, he would begin work by scouting the edges of the Peakless Wildlife Refuge. It had formerly been exclusively Delson's job, and joining him helped justify Rick's continued employment. That route would also be most likely to bring him into contact with the old man. As he jogged through the forested hills that had now become familiar, Rick found his mind wandering. He didn't usually run into anything during his patrol, and staying alert for the occasional surprise had become second nature. Still, for every hour he spent exploring fruitlessly, he found himself wondering about how necessary his job really was. Originally, he had been hired by Delson's family to deal with a jackalope infestation caused by the Global Lucrum Authority's experiments. He'd dealt with it in under a month. Yet before he'd finished, there had been an atmospheric lucrum disturbance that required all hands on deck. Then, after that, there had been a group of lucrum-using moles that had threatened to tunnel so much they'd collapse part of the refuge. So, month after month, Crises had kept him employed. Something else could come up at any moment, but it was also possible that he was no longer essential. If Adsela and Wemelot were only keeping him out of pity. Rick paused and focused, extending his lucrimous soul senses as far around him as he could. The GLA's sensing technique wasn't useful in the modern world, but in the refuge it was essential for finding things that were wrong. It had been limited at first, but Emily, Rick's mind flinched from the old sore spot. She had improved the technique, and in the months since, he'd continued improving it until he could easily sense the world around him. Unfortunately, he couldn't sense Delson. The old man must be avoiding him again, and with his teleportation technique, he could easily do so as long as he wanted. Sighing, Rick continued to jog around the edge. He couldn't cover the entire perimeter in a morning, but he tried to get a major swath. As he went, he continued to extend his senses into the world around him, not trying to find Delson and just searching for anything that might require his attention. After wandering for a time, something found him. Blue trundled through the underbrush in his direction. The aura bear was taller than Rick, even on all fours, a massive beast made even more dangerous by the naturally flowing aura that made the fur on its chest bright red. It growled as it sped up, lunging into the air and bringing its paws down on his shoulders.
"Good to see you too, Blue."
Rick reached out and rubbed the rough fur on the bear's belly. It bent down to snuffle at him, massive claws playfully raking along his shoulders. The aura bear was one of the few animals that roamed the entire Peakless Wildlife Refuge, an apex predator that ignored all other territories. At least, other than the bounds of the park itself, where it would be in danger from humans. Rick only ran into the animal every few days, but once Blue had grown accustomed to him, it went out of its way to come greet him every time they were near one another. Once, the paws the size of his head had been intimidating, but after ruining a few shirts, Rick's defensive corps had begun to adapt. It had been dangerous training for a time, and now it was more precise training. The difficult part was making sure his defensive aura was strong enough to prevent his clothes from being destroyed.
"I don't suppose you know anything about dreams, do you?"
Rick spoke in a soothing voice as he continued rubbing Blue's fur. It didn't really matter what he said. Delson had just told him that the aura bear liked the sound of calm voices.
"Do animals dream?"
That would be just the sort of question that would annoy Delson to death. "I shouldn't let it get to me. I guess it's just been too long since I've had a crisis, and my mind is inventing one."
Blue growled in agreement and reached down, clamping jaws over his shoulder. Rick winced instinctively but kept talking, rambling as he focused on his defensive corps so that the bear's teeth wouldn't ruin his jacket. He'd kept Lisa's gift to him undamaged so far, but an aura bear gnawing at his shoulder could overcome the jacket's ether reinforcement. Several minutes and one undamaged jacket later, Blue let out a huff that blew Rick's hair back. That implied the bear had apparently greeted him long enough, which meant it was about to finish with its traditional farewell. Specifically, the bear reared up to its full height, then brought its weight down on him in one smashing paw. Having expected it, Rick crossed his forearms above his head and centered himself so the force of the blow was spread across his entire body. He could feel his shoes digging into the earth, but his defensive corps held. Socialization complete, Blue dropped down onto all fours and trundled away absentmindedly. As Rick headed back to his usual route, he found himself rubbing his shoulder and pondering the minor damage the teeth had done to his aura. Blue generated aura in a different way than humans did, though he hadn't quite figured out all the differences. Every animal he'd ever had attack him used Lucrim in a slightly different way, which suggested that there must be a fundamental biological difference. It was one of many topics that Rick was curious about, but there simply wasn't time. For the past year, he'd been focused primarily on his own development, trying to prepare himself for whatever came next. Except, nothing had come next. He was significantly stronger, and he was proud of how far his Gram State Corps had come in generating his own Lucrum, but right now all that strength wasn't for anything. Working at the refuge was still useful to him, but it wouldn't be for much longer, and he had to admit that he might no longer be very useful to it. Sometimes when he was wandering through the forest alone, that scared him a bit. Circulating his lucromissile came as second nature, so even training while he worked wasn't a good distraction. Without anywhere to focus his mind, he became bored, and boredom eventually led him to disturbing places. With Melissa gone to join the Young Lucrum Artists of America, his life felt much emptier. He told himself that was normal, since his sister had been a huge part of his life for a long time. But it was more than that. For so long, his focus had been on keeping her healthy or earning her a better life. Without that goal, he was lost. So far, his efforts to redefine himself had failed, and he often worried that was because there wasn't anything else at the core of his soul. He loved training, but he wasn't strong enough for that to support him as a career. He didn't have the drive to start a business like Lisa. He liked ranging in the refuge, but didn't have the passion for animals that he saw in Wimmelot. He didn't want to be driven by revenge like some. He couldn't believe in a crazy goal like Damien's efforts to overthrow the current world order. And worst of all, he didn't feel happy simply existing, like Delson and many others. Uncle Frank said that it was just another problem from his upbringing that he'd needed to overcome. The rest of their family had never held long-term goals. They'd just rushed from crisis to crisis, always trying to feed an addiction or get a little temporary comfort. Rick admitted that was probably part of it, and he'd been working on his long-term planning, but he thought it was more than that. Maybe some people just weren't built to accomplish anything. A bolt of lightning thundered out of the clear sky, and suddenly his personal problems didn't seem so relevant. Rick shook himself out of his thoughts and identified the location. Not so far away, so he began running. Though he was much more familiar with moving through the refuge, sprinting was still risky, but he trusted his defensive corps to protect him against any accidents. Soon enough, he saw it. Several birds flying in anxious circles. When he reached the grove, he spotted a blackened tree trunk. His arrival made most of the birds retreat, but one lay smoking at the center of the impact point, and another hopped nearby even when he drew close. Both thunderpeckers had the dark feathers and bright yellow crests of their species. Rick didn't know them well enough to be sure if they were male or female. To him, the most relevant fact about thunderpeckers was their ability to generate lightning bolts. They were lesser cousins of the near-legendary thunderbirds, which he still wasn't sure were real animals instead of spiritual metaphors. Delson had not been at all helpful in that regard. Unfortunately, one of the birds lay on the blackened trunk, still smoking from the impact. Its wings twitched weakly, and he thought it was still alive. Sure enough, he found the problem. There was a bit of metal wire wrapped around one of its feet. Rick knelt down and gently reached out to try to unwind it. Not gently enough, because the other thunderpecker leapt to attack his hand. The thin beak was needle-sharp, capable of boring into even the hardest woods, and Rick winced as it repeatedly jabbed him. Even when he began to unwind the wire from the injured thunderpecker, the other continued to attack. It didn't ever seem to understand that he was trying to help, it just eventually realized that it couldn't injure him. Instead, it fluttered back, hopping back and forth and emitting chirps of distress. Removing the wire was simple enough, and the injured bird twitched in relief. Rick examined it, in over his head, but knowing that he had to do something. According to Wimmelot, the thunderpecker's lightning abilities backfired on them when in contact with certain metals that didn't exist in the natural world. Unfortunately, humans did use those metals, and even worse, the thunderpeckers would try to collect them. They were usually safe in the refuge, but these must have ranged further. Removing and manifesting a medical cage from his belt, Rick gently eased the injured thunderpecker into it, careful that its wings weren't pinched as the ether mechanism closed around it. That should stabilize it until he could get back. Not understanding, the other thunderpecker flew directly at his face, pecking wildly. Rick stumbled back and shielded his face, since he wasn't sure his defensive corps could protect his eyes from the sharp beak. After attacking ineffectually, the thunderpecker instead landed on his shoulder and began resolutely drilling into the side of his head. Ignoring the drumming against his skull, Rick stood up and looked carefully for a nest. They bored holes into the sides of trees, but sometimes they also made nests. He dimly remembered Wimmelot saying they did that only during mating season, which suggested that the two were a mating pair.
Take it easy. I only want to...
Rick tried to speak soothingly, but that only invited the thunderpecker to peck at his mouth instead. He tried to brush it aside without harming it, and just focused on the nest. Soon enough, he found it near the blackened tree, and also found what he'd feared. The nest had several lengths of sharp wire in it. He reached in to try to remove the wire without damaging the rest of the nest, though he couldn't help disrupting it. But he had to keep going, despite the increasing fervency of pecking, because unless he took away the wire, all the thunderpeckers in the area were in danger of scorching themselves. Just as he got the last bit of wire and stood back, satisfied, he realized that the lucrum in the thunderpecker was shifting. Animals didn't have lucrum as souls, so the movement of lucrum within them was inscrutable, but Rick had gained more of an instinct for it, and that instinct told him that he was in danger. Too late. Another bolt of lightning seared down, and for a moment his world was incandescent. Rick stumbled into the clearing, his mind catching up to the fact that the thunderpecker had just hit him with lightning. He'd been hit with human-generated lightning before, but this felt different. He stared down at his hands, surprised that they weren't burned black. His hair wasn't even singed. With the remaining thunderpecker flying nearby to watch him angrily, Rick slowly stumbled his way back to the central office. He might not have been injured, but that bolt of lightning had been unlike any other attack he'd ever felt. His defensive core still shivered with it, as if it had drawn the electricity into itself. Rick watched the thunderpecker cautiously, since he didn't want to take another bolt, but it stayed at a distance, its energy spent. When he arrived, he was surprised that the sun was fairly high up in the sky. His work had taken longer than he thought. That was good, since it meant that the others would likely have arrived from their homes off the refuge. Sure enough, one of the lights was on.
Was that a thunderpecker bolt?
Wimmelot emerged before he arrived, a look of slight concern on his face. In response, Rick jabbed a thumb at the bird still following him murderously.
Unless there are a lot of other birds around here that summon lightning, I think so. Just what did you do to... Oh, I see the cage. Just one moment.
The young man placed his palms together and let his lucrum flow in a strange technique that Rick couldn't quite follow. Even though Wimmelot was one of the refuge's main employees, he wore his usual skinny jeans and a t-shirt with yet another obscure video game character. At least Rick thought it was from a game. To Rick's surprise, the thunderpecker behind him fluttered to the ground. It hopped a few times, looking about, and then settled down. After one last suspicious glare at them, it closed its eyes and seemed to sleep.
What was that? Rick asked.
Wimmelot just shrugged and bent down to look at the medical cage.
It's a sedative technique. Not recommended for regular use, but without it, some lucrum-using animals will injure themselves. Hopefully that will keep it calm until we can heal its mate. Phew, looks like it took quite a blast. Found some metal, I take it.
They entered the office, and Wimmelot gently pulled the injured bird from the cage, checking it with a more careful eye than Rick possessed. He was unsure if he should just leave, but just then Atsela walked into the room. She was still shrugging on her lab coat, the concern on her face melting into a smirk.
Wimmy, are you literally caring for a bird with an injured wing?
It's a thunderpecker that shocked itself,
Wimmelot answered curtly, without looking up.
How sweet. Soon you'll have another little forest friend.
Nope, it looks like it won't make it. Guess you'll get to grind it up into boner pills for fighters who can't get it up anymore.
Atsela rolled her eyes and turned to look at Rick instead.
Good on you for finding the poor thing. Did you run into any more invasive species on your patrol?
No, not really. Rick shifted away to let Wimmelot work and lowered his voice.
I had something I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah? What's up?
Abruptly, Rick's mind caught up to his mouth, and he realized what he was doing. He had been intending to ask Atsela about whether or not dreams could have any more significance. She knew more about the mystical side of lucrum, but wouldn't give him any bullshit. Yet now that question felt idiotic, the remnants of a meaningless dream, and asking her seemed insane. Her smirk was cute, but he didn't want it directed at him. Rick scrambled for something else that wouldn't make him look like an idiot.
Last week we talked about the refuge's endowment, yeah?
I meant to look up more but never did. Is that a purely financial thing? If it's actually some kind of core that generates lucrum, I'm not sure how that's different than a perpetual soul.
Adsela blinked as if that hadn't been what she expected, but recovered quickly.
Oh, they're entirely different. The endowment only exists on paper, or on circuits, I guess. It's a bunch of stocks and bonds and things. It's all paid out in lucrum, but we just use that to fund the refuge, so it's nothing like a perpetual soul.
That's not true,
Wemelot said from across the room.
It's a perpetual endowment.
Oh, that label doesn't mean anything. Just that it generates enough lucrum to fund the refuge in perpetuity, but that's entirely dependent on how much we spend.
Wouldn't a perpetual soul be the same way? Rick asked. When they both looked at him, he shrugged. I mean, the idea is that your lucrum soul can generate enough lucrum to support you if you never work another day in your life. But isn't that based on how much lucrum you use in exactly the same way?
Maybe, Adsela said reluctantly. But it isn't that simple. To qualify as a perpetual soul, you need a certain degree of stable lucrum generation that's self-sustaining. They're sometimes built into birthright cores, but you hear about birthrighters going bankrupt all the time before mommy and daddy bail them out. That doesn't mean they're not perpetual souls.
Maybe it's more complex than I thought, then. Rick frowned and started to say more, but Adsela waved his question aside.
Your financial questions always get way too detailed, Rick. Seriously, just look it up online. There are tons of people talking about it in detail who can tell you anything you'd want to know.
He nodded, making a mental note to do just that. It might actually be effective, too. For a long time, perpetual souls were something he was aware of, but they were so far beyond him that when he did think of them, it was more confusing than anything. But he'd used a lucrum-generating core for years now, and he knew far more, so perhaps he could take the next step. Of course, even if he was a perpetual soul and an immortal, that would just buy him more time in which he wouldn't be sure what he should do. While Rick began looking up the basics on his phone, Wemelot finished his work on the Thunderpecker. It still hopped weakly, but Wemelot placed it into a more spacious cage. He then hooked it by the door and backed away. Soon the other Thunderpecker woke up and hopped closer. Instead of being distraught to find its mate in a cage, it hopped around the sides of the cage, poking its beak through and chirping. At least it didn't seem inclined to attack anyone else. Rick smiled as he watched the two birds communicate in their chirping way. He might not be passionate about helping animals, but he was glad that he'd been able to help the two of them.
Hey, Wimmy, do you want to go to the showdown this weekend?
Adsela asked toward both of them, yet Rick thought her eyes were on him instead of her brother. He had no idea what it even was, but Wimmelot rolled his eyes.
You want to see some muscled freaks flex and crush beer cans against their foreheads?
It's more exciting than freaking soccer, dork.
Soccer is an elegant sport, lucrum league or not. It doesn't worship at the altar of lucrum obsession.
Rick's eyes shifted between them as he followed the conversation, but eventually he had to speak up. What's this showdown?
You don't know?
Wemelot raised a skeptical eyebrow.
I thought most... No, never mind. It's a roaming circus of lucrum-based events, you could say. And this weekend the circus is coming to Brenton. For most of a month, I think.
That's unfair,
Adsela said, tapping on her phone.
Here, I'll send you a link. Basically, the showdown is one of the only interesting lucrum events. Not like Smash Ball, which is just dumb and artificial. Each event in the showdown has people who are the best in the world at something specific. And I really mean best. I don't know how we get them to come to Branton, but they come by a few times a decade.
His phone beeped, and Rick found Adsela's link to the website. It seemed that the showdown included traditional combat events, as well as enhanced versions of various sports, but also more specialized events. Unfortunately, the pages with more detailed information were terribly formatted for viewing on a phone, leaving him to scroll through the glossy advertising sections. It might have been interesting, but he found himself more troubled thinking about why Adsela had brought it up. For a moment, he'd wondered if she was indirectly inviting him out. Now he worried that she was trying to get rid of him. This showdown did seem like the sort of thing that would interest him, but it also clearly advertised that it was looking for new, up-and-coming competitors. It was possible that Adsela was unsubtly hinting that he should look into this or another job. As he scrolled mindlessly, Rick tried to think about how long it had been since he'd accomplished something truly important for the refuge.
He thought he earned his keep, but he could also understand if that time was coming to an end. Then Rick froze, staring at his phone, all thoughts of such social interactions fading. All he could do was stare at the picture above the article. He barely even read the headline, something about the new generation of elites being chosen. The man in the picture was the same one he had seen in his dream. Chapter 2. The Showdown. His first reaction, of course, was to assume it couldn't really be the same person. Looking more carefully, he noticed several differences between the picture and the mortal opponent from his dream. In the dream, the man had shorter hair, an older face, a scar across his cheek. All those things were just convincing him that this was a younger version of the dream opponent. "Guys, should I know who this is?" Rick turned his phone toward Adsela and Wemelot, trying to keep his face calm. "Like, is he somebody famous or something?"
"I don't recognize him," Wemelot said. "But Adsela is the one who likes to watch thugs."
"He looks more your type, Wemmy."
Adsela did peer closer, but then shook her head.
"I don't recognize him. The caption just identifies him as one of the new contenders in the junior leagues."
"Why?"
Rick shook his head slowly. "He just looked weirdly familiar. So, the showdown is this weekend?"
"The public events are. But I think they've already started some base qualifications and stuff. They're here for a whole month and they do all kinds of different things. Honestly, I don't pay attention to those parts. I just like the main events."
"Yeah, thanks." Rick put his phone away as if it didn't matter, but found himself memorizing the location. It was going to take place in the big sports arena in downtown Branton. Back when he'd commuted from his old apartment, he'd passed by it occasionally when he took a western route. After chatting with the siblings for a while longer, Rick headed back out into the refuge to continue patrolling. Or at least he tried. He utterly failed to focus on his work, once stumbling straight into a stream and soaking his shoes. Try as he might, he couldn't get the coincidence out of his head. The problem was that it was all ridiculous. Even in the past eras of roaming Lucrum warriors, Rick didn't think that dreams had ever been a meaningful part of anything except in melodramatic stories. As he walked, he pored over every bit of history he remembered, and he came up with a few seers or masters who claimed to have Lucrum dreams, but there was some controversy about whether they had been frauds or manipulators. Dreams were just the random firing of a sleeping brain. Yet, he had seen his opponent in the dream before he saw him in real life. Hadn't he? He started to wonder if he had changed his memories of the dream so that they lined up with the image he'd seen. It didn't feel that way, but of course it wouldn't if he was deceiving himself. By the time he was mostly finished with his patrol for that day, Rick had convinced himself not to worry about it. He'd still talk to Uncle Frank and Delson if he could, but most likely they would just confirm what he knew. Besides, weird dreams were no help at all in deciding where he needed to go in life. And yet, Rick found himself biking toward the stadium. Though he'd continued using his Lucrum bike, both for training and for transportation, his improvement had eventually plateaued. He could cruise in 43rd gear, which made him faster than most cars and fast enough to use the Lucrum-powered lanes. Going faster than that required precise training, specialized cores, and more. Unless they were all just rich, Rick wasn't sure how bikers did it without hindering their growth otherwise. As he reached a corner, Rick turned hard, skidding only briefly, before shooting off in a new direction. One of the features of the bike he hadn't even realized existed until he reached higher speeds was a self-stabilizing element. It let him redirect his momentum with unnatural speed, and though the inertia bounced him around, his defensive core was more than up to the challenge. Keeping one eye on traffic, Rick couldn't help but examine the city as well. Once Melissa had gone, he'd had far fewer reasons to return. It seemed like it was a little worse each time, though he suspected that was only his imagination. He wasn't imagining all the advanced Lucrum stations, though, or how even the better districts had homeless lingering on the streets. It was easy to ignore all of that out at the refuge. Every time he came back into Branton, he was reminded that doing something about one problem meant ignoring the others. Not that he could really do anything about McGuire Incorporated and so many others squeezing those on the bottom of society. Rick was out of the lowest quartile now and didn't want to forget about how hard things could be, but without knowing where he was going, he didn't want to spend too long looking back. When the sports stadium came into view, Rick finally pushed all other thoughts aside. There were several big ones in Branton, but most were devoted to standard sports. The largest stadium was owned by several major corporations and served to host Lucrum-based events, so he knew it a little. The entire structure was ether-reinforced to avoid damage from events, which meant that it was also one of the safest places to retreat during a natural disaster. That day, it might not have been so safe after all. Telling himself that he was just investigating a potentially interesting event, Rick hopped off his bike, retracted it into its chip, and headed up the stairs. Though there was a small crowd around the entrance, they didn't seem to have all the ticket lines open as usual. Instead, there was only one line in, a middle-aged woman in a stadium uniform interrogating each person. Well, not all. As he waited in line, Rick saw that some people simply flew in overhead, either by their own power or in Lucrum vehicles. When he came up to the gate, the woman eyed him.
"You here to compete?"
"What? No." Rick shook his head quickly. "I know the showdown events haven't started yet, but I just wanted to look."
"Doesn't matter. Here to scout or participate, you need to qualify. Let me see your Lucrum portfolio."
Rick frowned. Why should that be necessary?
"We can't have anyone getting killed in our stadium. They have safety precautions, but they're not designed to protect civilians."
The woman extended a hand, along with a world-weary expression that suggested his obstinance was her major obstacle to finding any happiness in life. The apartment search process had hardened him to giving out such data, so Rick got out his phone and pulled up his portfolio. Name: Rick Hunter. Ether tier: 12. Ether score: 443. Lucrum generation: 85,200. Current Lucrum: 85,200. Rick Hunter's Lucrum portfolio. Foundation: 3,700, level 6. Dark Blood Kettle: 16,600, level 4. Offensive Lucor: 13,300, level 7. Defensive Lucor: 35,750, level 9. Bunyan Step: 15,100, level 8. Graham's Stake: 23,900, level 4. Demonic Bond: Buffed Gage and Yithsel: 750, stage 1. Demon Mass: 500, N.A. Total Lucrum: 109,100. He'd improved while working at the Peakless Wildlife Refuge, but he wasn't sure if it would matter because he didn't know what the showdown cared about. They might only care about combat corps, or maybe they had a more specific focus. Over the past months, he'd been trying to build up his Graham Stake Corps for the sake of the investment returns, and his raw generation rate hadn't increased much, so he wasn't certain if it would meet with approval.
"You need lessons on handing things?" the woman asked.
Rick quickly handed her his phone and let her check over it. She took longer than expected, but then grunted and handed him the phone back. There wasn't even any judgment on his portfolio or his choices. She just looked on to the next person in line. That had to mean that he was accepted, so Rick headed forward into the stadium itself. What he found was chaos. Instead of the central area being cleared for a single event, there were dozens of minor competitions occurring all across it. Most of the stands were empty, though he spotted a few small groups that appeared to be watching below with sharp eyes. Scouts, presuming that those competing were the contestants. As he found his way down to the field, Rick just tried to take it all in. Many were competing in more traditional events, like ring fights or sprints. He saw more than a few Olympic events, though generally the ones that could be improved by Lucrum. No one seemed to be in charge, and no one approached him, so he just wandered in. Several men and a woman were hefting black spheres that reminded him of kettlebells, though the way the fighters strained with them suggested they must be unnaturally heavy. Some merely lifted or carried the heaviest, while he was shocked to see a few actually hurl them high into the air before catching them, their bodies braced against the return blow. He wasn't sure what event that could be, but he was curious. There was a table of the balls, each secured in a ring, and nobody was guarding it. Rick stepped closer and tried to pick one up experimentally. It nearly made him fall, as he wasn't braced properly. Gritting his teeth, Rick managed to heft the dark sphere up to chest level, wondering just what it was made out of to weigh so much. Lifting it was possible with his full strength, but he couldn't imagine hurling one.
"You'd better put that down, son." The man who spoke wasn't much older than him, but sneered as he approached. He grabbed the sphere with one hand and returned it to its place. "Don't want you injuring yourself."
The insult was obvious, but Rick decided to ignore it. "Thanks for the tip," he answered blandly, catching the man's gaze. "I'm not here to compete. I'm just looking to watch the top contenders."
"You won't find them here. Not today."
The man hefted one of the larger spheres instead of making eye contact.
"Today is just about getting into the junior leagues. You should know that."
"I guess I don't know enough about this. I'm just trying to find somebody I used to know while he's in town."
"Huh. Well, good luck. Do you know where he's positioned?"
"Not really. These are just the qualifications." Though the man gave him an irritated look, he grudgingly answered.
"The top tier of the showdown is beyond any of us. The main event here is the junior leagues, the young fighters who might one day join the showdown. I really doubt your friend is in the first, and if he's in the second, good luck. But he could also be in the preliminary or final qualifying rounds."
Rick nodded and listened, not caring that he was being condescended to. What mattered was that he got a better explanation than he'd been able to find on the site. He'd gotten confused with how both the elite showdowns and the junior leagues were both referred to in similar ways. Apparently, the elites didn't change often, and lots of people considered them boring to follow, whereas the junior leagues attracted more attention. Ultimately, he still had no idea exactly where his imaginary opponent might be. If he was actually in the junior showdowns, he wouldn't be in public until the event on the weekend. Most likely, he didn't need to participate in the qualifying rounds, but Rick continued looking just in case. He found himself distracted for a time, watching an event he hadn't noticed on his way in. A single competitor stood in a small ring in the center of a circle. They had to stay in the ring, defending themselves against attackers from all sides. King of the hill without much of a hill, basically. Some stayed at the center by evading or redirecting attackers, but others made a show of enduring all attacks thrown at them. Though Rick wasn't about to jump in without understanding what he'd be getting into, Rick found himself intrigued. His defensive corps might be well suited to the event, both in keeping him alive and in anchoring him to the position. He couldn't figure out how the event was scored, if it was at all, but perhaps it was more of an art than a science. A streak of aura seared itself into his vision, and Rick winced automatically. He looked up in time to nearly blind himself as another javelin of aura was hurled above the stadium. Though he braced himself, no one else seemed to care, only a few seeming to even notice. Not an attack then, but another event. Rick saw that the competitors were waiting in the stands at one side, hurling toward a man carrying a milky panel on the other. Whatever it was, he used it to absorb each javelin as it reached him. Those javelins. As another one streaked overhead, Rick confirmed what he'd been fearing. It wasn't an attack exactly, but it was immensely powerful, the kind of thing that wasn't just created by a six-figure generation rate, but an entire combat corps devoted to a single skill. He wasn't weak, but his defensive corps would be utterly destroyed by a bolt coming from a six-digit corps. All the chaos had distracted him from his usual habit, so Rick hastily began to investigate the generation rates of everyone around him. The average strength inside the stadium was much higher than normal, with only a few as low as 50,000 lucrum, and generation rates above 100,000 lucrum not uncommon. More dangerous than that, almost none of them were unfocused birthright cores. All around him, he saw highly specialized combat cores. A shriek of metal grabbed his attention. Rick saw a glossy black lucrum vehicle pitching to the side, then one of the black spheres plummeting nearby to bury itself in the ground. He pieced together what had happened. One of the competitors below had hurled the sphere upward and accidentally hit a vehicle coming in over the side of the stadium. Judging from the long scar along the side of the vehicle, the sphere had done damage to the core of the construct. Judging from the young woman leaping out, that wasn't being taken well.
"Who did that?"
she screamed into the faces of the sphere competitors, and they didn't waste any time outing one of their own. The woman charged at him, and the two began arguing violently about who had been at fault. Their argument did attract attention, more than the flying spheres or the aura lances. No one seemed particularly surprised, just mildly interested, even when the woman demanded recompense in the form of a duel. Just like that, the two of them were scheduling a legal duel to serious injury, both glaring as if a scrape on a car was worth a bloody vendetta. Rick turned around and headed out of the stadium. It was true that he was outclassed even in the preliminary qualifying rounds, but that wouldn't have made him leave. That would actually have excited him normally, since even being beaten could help his lucrum a soul grow considerably. But he'd spent enough time in places where people started feuds at the drop of a hat, and he knew it wasn't worth it. As he left, Rick reflected that there was a strange parallel between the highest and lowest tiers of society. His extended family frequently got into fights over the slightest things. The upper classes might dress better and view themselves as far superior, but the fact that they flew into a rage for slightly different reasons didn't change the fundamental dynamic. Whatever else he wanted in life, Rick knew that he didn't want that. On the stairs out of the stadium, Rick's path was blocked by a man in a bright blue and green suit. Rick's body seemed to understand before his mind caught up, shifting his path to find another set of stairs. He hadn't seen Alger in a year, but the owner of the underground fighting ring was always bad news. Given his involvement with the GLA, Alger might be more than that, but Rick didn't want to know. Unfortunately, Alger now stood on the next staircase over. He flowed down it, twirling his cane, apparently nonchalant, yet crossing the distance between them in a troublingly short period of time. "Richard Hunter," Alger grinned when he arrived and tapped him on the chest with the head of his cane. "Or Rick, I believe. Or Dick. Can I call you Dick?" "I'd rather you didn't." Rick tried to step around Alger, but the other man flowed like he was skating over ice. "I think that would be a better name for you, but no matter. No, no, what matters is that you found yourself someplace interesting for once." When Rick tried to push through him, Alger spun with his momentum so quickly it was like pushing air. Somehow Alger was beside him, an arm around his shoulders. "Ah, memories. When I first met you, Rick, you were such an interesting young man. But then you made such boring life choices. Each time I thought you might live up to your full potential, you chose a different path." "Let me go." Rick pushed away the arm, but again barely even felt the cloth. Alger slid away and placed both hands on top of his cane, regarding him primly. "But it seems, despite your best efforts, you've grown. You've grown strong, and not in the way I would have predicted." Alger stared at him, eyes practically glowing beneath his top hat. "As it happens, I'm in need of a new competitor to participate in the junior showdowns, as my previous candidate has proved politically compromised. This could be quite an opportunity for you." "No thanks." Rick decided it was useless to try to push the strange man away, so he shoved his hands into his pockets and resolved to just march to the exit. Unfortunately, Alger kept pace, eventually sliding in front of his path again. "You won't give me a chance to change your mind. This wouldn't be like the underground, no, not at all. You see, there are so many sparks like yours, but so many of them are snuffed out. It simply isn't economical to invest too much in them. But now I'd be willing to part with a little more, and you could benefit immensely." "I don't trust your ideas about what would benefit me." Rick tried to push through, but suddenly there was a hand on his shoulder, stopping him cold. Alger no longer watched him playfully, instead fixing him with a dead gaze. "Do you know who I hate more than anyone, Richard? Those who have power, but use it to make the world a less fun place." The hand on his shoulder began to tighten, and Rick winced in pain, trying to pull away, but unable to escape the other man's grip. It didn't feel like his defensive core was being overwhelmed. It was as if his core didn't even exist. Just as he worried his bones would crack, they were interrupted by a loud cough. Rick turned in surprise, but he noted that Alger looked surprised as well. It was perhaps the first time he'd seen the strange man taken off guard and the expression was comically exaggerated, as if he'd never been surprised before. Another man stood in the stands just beside him, wearing a battered gray robe. As they stared at him, he drew a cigarette to his lips and took a long drag on it.
If the kid doesn't want to compete, Alger, you can't make him. You.
Alger glared at the new arrival, but he did let go of Rick's shoulder.
You're involved with the showdowns this year. I haven't decided yet.
The man stared down at Alger without expression. His hair was shaved down to gray stubble that competed with the stubble across his chin for length, and there was a long scar across his cheek.
Why are you searching around, Alger? Something the matter with your ace? The boy needs someone to motivate him.
Alger smiled unpleasantly and tapped his cane on the ground.
Are you really going to stand in my way over something so trivial?
In response, the man simply took a long drag on his cigarette. Rick blinked as he realized that the length of it was slowly burning to ash as he watched, until the stub entered the man's mouth. Something bright glowed within it, his eyes burning for a moment. Though Alger snorted scornfully, he did turn and sweep away, coattails following him. Rick watched him for a time, reassuring himself that the strange man was truly leaving, but eventually he had to turn back to the old man who had saved him.
Thank you,
Rick said. The man simply grunted.
I did it more to annoy him than to help you. But if you don't want this life, the last person you should get involved with is Alger.
I'd gotten that impression, but he doesn't take no for an answer. Rick climbed up the steps to get closer to the man, since that took him closer to the exits anyway. I'll leave if you don't want anyone to bother you, but can I at least get your name? The man stared at him for a while. He slowly pulled a pack of cigarettes from his pocket. After some fumbling, he retrieved one and put it between his lips. Finally, he lit it with a flame that formed above his finger, still completely silent. It was a clear enough answer. Rick shrugged and turned to go. Suit yourself. Thanks again.
I don't think you're cut out for this, the man said abruptly.
Rick was mildly annoyed, but suddenly there was a gray card shoved toward him.
But if you want to see the showdown, maybe you can decide for yourself. That will get you in.
Thanks. Rick took the card and decided not to press his luck, just nodding and departing. It was shaped like a business card, but instead of a name, it merely referred to itself as a Showdown Junior Pass. He wasn't sure if he actually wanted that, but he'd take the gift. This time, when Rick tried to leave the stadium, he wasn't stopped by anyone. He put the card into his pocket, but found himself running his fingers along the edges. Maybe it would be best to flee and hope Alger forgot about him. Yet, it would be more interesting to return and at least try to compete. Given that he'd received a pass entirely for free, it would likely be pure profit for him, unless he was too seriously injured. The pass might also allow him to investigate the top contenders. Yet, as Rick left the stadium, he wasn't thinking about his dream. Chapter 3. Last Call. As Rick biked back to the refuge, he felt as though he was on the precipice of something. Twice in his life, he'd taken a risk and soon regretted it. Both of those times, he'd come out of the fires stronger, but he reminded himself that he wasn't protected by any force of destiny. He could easily have ended up crippled or ruined. Taking unnecessary risks was senseless. Of course, given the level of competition he'd seen, there was a good chance he wouldn't even qualify to participate in the showdown. But if that was true, he'd want to know, rather than have it as an empty hope in his past. Uncle Alan had been a pit fighter once, and always told stories of how he could have made it big if only he'd made slightly different choices. That was about as grim a future as being crippled. When Rick got back, he only had enough energy to do his usual exercises and a small amount of research online. His biggest concern was the exact characteristics of the showdown, and though the internet wasn't always a reliable source of information for high-end lucrum events, it was better than nothing. Everything he read suggested that it was cutthroat, but not literally. The events were too public for that. Many of the competitors became celebrities with all the attention and endorsement deals that came with that. Just looking over their profiles, Rick realized that that life held no appeal for him. Somehow it all made him even more tired than before, and he collapsed into bed and slept dreamlessly. The next morning, he woke unnaturally early again, but he felt refreshed. Rick scouted an unusual route, hoping to catch Delson off guard, but he couldn't find the old man. He also ran into nothing that required any work from him at all, every empty hour reminding him that he needed to make a decision. When he took a break for lunch, Rick decided that he was being stupid by going it alone and got out his phone. He actually had two messages from Melissa that he'd missed while his phone had no service. An article about YLAA developments and an animated hamster smashing bricks with its head. Rick sent her back info about the showdown and asked to chat, but she was busy. His sister would get back to him soon enough, so after that he left a message with Uncle Frank. As usual, it was difficult to get a hold of their uncle. From the last time they'd spoken, several months ago, it seemed that his job was getting steadily more difficult and the trend was expected to continue for potentially several years. There was no way of knowing when he'd be replying then. Rick paced around his cabin for a while, considering his options. He wanted to go walking, but he'd quickly lose phone service, and he needed that to do more research. Just when he was about to leave, Melissa texted, "Don't make any terrible life choices without me." Rick smiled and replied with, "I'll save you some meth," before heading to the main office. It was closed since Adsela and Wemelot had left for lunch, but he had his own key. Using the better connection in the main office, Rick sat down and began to delve deeper into the research. The reason the rumors were unclear seemed to be that the showdown operated differently in different regions. There was a public sphere that seemed clear enough. Competitors had patrons or sponsors and competed for prize purses in a wide variety of categories across the globe. But how exactly they connected to their sponsors and event rules varied widely. Events in the USA were corporate, but Europe had entirely different rules. The Siberian events were secretive, and the Nokan showdowns had a reputation for ruthlessness. More troublesome, he got the sense that there was a deeper sphere. It wasn't merely celebrity. There were greater players keeping score across the events. There he found only rumors, from reasonable-sounding speculation to full-on conspiracy theory. That was what bothered him. Many of the showdown competitors were essentially just athletes, and some were wealthy enough to be their own brand. But those who worked for some other power, he wasn't sure what rules they played by, but he couldn't trust them. Perhaps the showdown would be safer than the past events he'd encountered at the highest levels, but in the beginning he would be relying entirely on the mercy of institutions, and he didn't trust institutions. Just as Rick was getting frustrated, he heard the door. Adsela first locked herself out, realized he'd unlocked the door, then came in. She tossed her keys onto the counter and glanced at him.
"Something go wrong?"
"Nah, just wanted to talk to you more about the showdown." Rick put away his phone and got up to follow her into the back hall. "I'm not sure how much you know as a fan, but I've been trying to look up more."
"Oh, that interested you."
Adsela gave him a surprisingly broad smile.
"I hoped it might. Yeah, I was really into the showdown when I was younger, and I still keep up with it."
"Do you know how success is measured? It isn't all just money, is it?"
"Oh, definitely not. Some factions even scorn the money side of it and make it all about honor."
"But you can't eat honor. How does it actually work?"
"I can't claim to know all the details, but I can definitely do better than random people on the internet."
Adsela moved to her office computer and began typing in book titles.
"I got most of this information from these books, to be honest, so if you want to read them yourself, you won't really need me."
Rick stepped up beside her to look at the titles. "But I assume you can summarize. It might be time-sensitive."
"Oh, you're that interested?"
Adsela glanced at him with a spark in her eyes.
"I thought you might want to try it, since it seemed like your sort of event. The showdown is one of the last areas where they don't really care about your qualifications, just merit. So for someone like... Wait, sorry, is that dickish of me?"
"It's not a big deal. But you're delaying long enough, you're making me wonder if you don't actually know."
"Sorry, no."
She took a breath and refocused before speaking in her usual calm voice.
The ultimate goal of most people in the showdown is to receive official recognition, which is added to a permanent card. If you finish an event in the top three, of course you get a seal to mark your victory. But every major power and institution is also capable of bestowing seals upon anyone who catches their eye. Get the right seals, and you can open major doors for yourself.
That sounds like a resume to me. Rick frowned at the thought, but Edsela just rolled her eyes.
If you want to be utterly boring about it, I personally love the idea, because it makes for such great stories. For example, there was a huge showdown event last generation where a bunch of disciples from the world powers were fighting each other. The projected winner of the melee was the disciple of the world sculptor, but everyone else teamed up against him, particularly the disciples of Tsar Chernabog, who eventually brought him down early on. In a normal event, that would just be bad luck and he'd get nothing. But Tsar Chernabog eliminated his own disciples for cowardice and bestowed his personal seal on the world sculptor's disciple. Nobody really cared who won. All of the attention was on the crazy skills the disciple displayed holding off everyone else.
Listening in silence, Rick found himself strangely adrift. He knew the titles Edsela mentioned, but they were historical figures, not people he expected to actually get involved with real life. Even though he knew there were plenty of immortals still around, filling the top ether tiers of society, they were so far beyond him that he rarely gave them thought, any more than he thought about horse breeding, gold-plated toilets, or living on the moon.
Oh, come on,
Edsela regarded him sourly.
That didn't do anything for you. I think it's a nice story.
I don't think I'm going to be getting a commendation from a world power anytime soon. Rick gave her a weak smile and shook his head. But I appreciate you explaining it to me. I imagine there are much less impressive seals that could still be useful for someone like me.
Right, exactly. Of course, the first step is just to get a card, and even getting in is difficult.
What kind of card do you mean? Like this? Rick pulled out the business card he'd been given, and Edsela whistled as she took it carefully and looked it over.
No, it's not an official participant card. If they haven't changed the rules, passes like these are a one-time opportunity that expires once the showdown moves on. The real cards stay with you forever, even if you leave the showdown. It's as good as a diplomatic passport in almost every country. Still, it's nothing to sneeze at. You have a weird knack for catching people's attention, Rick.
Ignoring her compliment, backhanded or otherwise, Rick instead focused on her earlier statement. What did you say about leaving the showdown? Are you allowed to just walk away?
That's how it works in theory. If you're in debt to your sponsor or a slave or something, of course it doesn't work that way.
Edsela handed the card back to him and shrugged.
But yes, people retire all the time. It's considered shameful, as the purpose of the showdown is supposed to be to reach the absolute peak of lucrum achievement. But if you've acquired some good seals, you could easily retire and coast on those as a personal trainer and the like.
I guess if there's no risk, I should at least try to compete.
That's the right attitude.
Edsela playfully hit him in the stomach.
I don't think there's any way I'd see you at the main event, but if you qualify and follow the world tour, who knows? Maybe the next time you come around, you might be a celebrity.
Rick put the card away and shook his head. That eager to get rid of me, huh?
Just something to think about.
Edsela looked like she was about to say more, but just then Delson stuck his head in the office. He was also starting to say something, so the two just stared at each other in a brief moment of awkwardness. Rick stepped into it quickly. Delson, I was wanting to talk to you.
Well, damn it.
Delson sighed and rubbed his shotgun's handle over his shoulder.
Guess I can't get out of this one. Step outside and let me talk to my niece a bit. Then you can join me on the next patrol.
Keep him from escaping out a window, Edsela, Rick said. She grinned and nodded, but then pushed him out so they could discuss tribal business. Back in the hallway, Rick wandered to the lobby, his steps heavy. He wished he had someone else to talk to, but Wimelat was nowhere to be found yet. His phone had another playful text from Melissa, but nothing from Uncle Frank. Left with only his own thoughts, Rick began to spiral into incredulity. All of this was absurd, some kind of fever dream. It was bad enough that he was considering trying to compete on the world stage, even if just the minor leagues of it. But what made it all utterly ridiculous was that he was doing it because of a damn dream. Though he still felt a flicker of the rage he'd felt in that dream, More than anything, he felt like a fool for letting himself get swept up in it. Yet without something to drive him forward, he'd soon begin drifting.
All right, let's get this over with.
Delson slouched from the hallway after him with a scowl on his face.
Let's hear whatever adolescent nonsense you need to throw at me this time.
As if to stop him, Delson set a brutal pace into the refuge, leaving Rick panting as he struggled to keep up. He wasn't sure if they were even meaningfully patrolling anywhere. The old man was just trying to leave him behind. Yet Rick had a lot more experience moving over such terrain than he'd had a year ago, so he kept up, trying to draw enough breath to ask questions when he had his chance. After a broad arc and the quenching of a small fire, they finally reached a hill near the center of the refuge. There were no true peaks, but it had a bit of a view over the forest surrounding them. When Delson stopped by the edge of a cliff, Rick caught up and was surprised by how little he needed to catch his breath.
I'm dealing with some mystical bullshit.
Rick had been thinking about what approach to take and decided that sincerity might backfire. Before you mock, just remember that you sent me on an acid trip to a buffalo graveyard.
Ah, fuck. I'm going to regret this.
Delson folded his arms.
But I know you don't give up. What is it?
Do you know of any trustworthy sources about dreams actually being meaningful? Normally I'd assume not, but I'm pretty sure I dreamed someone who I'd never seen in real life, then saw the next day.
Are you on the wacko tobacco, kid? You think you're some kind of hero to get mystical dreams?
I can't deny what I saw. Also, when I woke up, I was circulating lucrum as if getting ready for a fight, and I'd never done that before.
Fine. What did you dream?
Well, Rick took a deep breath and closed his eyes. I was standing on a skyscraper over a city I don't know. There was someone there, and I immediately hated him. It made sense to me then, but not in the way dreams usually make sense, no matter what. It was as if I had memories of him. The reason I asked you is that you were there too, telling me not to fight. I tried to ask you why, but you wouldn't answer. Then you started taking off your...
God damn it, kid.
Delson cuffed him on the side of the head, but Rick thought he caught just a hint of a grin.
Did you really set all this up just to get me back?
In fact, Rick had been hoping to disarm the old man enough to get a serious answer to the question. He decided to stop playing around and just directly outlined what had happened, focusing on the events he thought couldn't be explained by the dream being meaningless. Delson listened until he was done, then shook his head.
If there are dreams that are anything more than the ravings of a sleeping brain, that's news to me. That sort of thing is spoken about in old tales, but not in the ones I trust. Either you saw him before, or your brain forced a connection where none existed.
So you think it's all nothing?
Well, not all. The fact that you were circulating lucrum can actually be easily explained. That's something that tends to happen once fighters get fully used to their combat cores. You dream realistically enough that your body starts actually using lucrum.
Delson chuckled at his expression.
Don't worry, you wouldn't actually use it in a way that could harm anyone, not unless you have much deeper issues.
Rick was actually more worried about spending lucrum in his sleep, but he could look that up on his own. Having Delson confirm that there was nothing to it left him feeling more grounded, surprisingly. Attempting to enter the showdown might be the right choice for him, but he wouldn't do it because of dreams or anything that ridiculous. They chatted for a while longer before heading back. Just before they left, Rick found himself standing by the cliff one more time.